How many words was the, we talked about this a bit, I know, but the oral history of Toronto FC. I want to see the parts that died in the cutting room floor. To me, it's like it's like one of those great movies. And if you, I mean, you could put a, you could put a follow up together.
I think I know the answer to the word count question, John. It came up the other day with the magazine guys, the X magazine guys.
Oh, was that right?
I believe is it 18,000? Is that correct?
Yeah, it was 18,000.
But it came down from.
Oh, it came down from 50.
Yeah.
It was, and I wrote 50. And then they told me a few days before, however the decision was made, yeah, we're going to chop this down to about 15 or 18. So, yeah.
I think that's still a record for us.
Yeah, well, from what they tell me, it's the longest story ever published on sportsnet.ca. So.
Wow, back in the day, Brent used to have paragraphs that long.
That's right.
Maybe not. It was a great read.
Oh, thank you.
And as I said, it's getting a lot of love on social media ahead of the opener, the home opener, if you want to call it that. They don't call it a home opener in soccer.
They still do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to drop a baseball reference in there because I know that it'll result in you throwing stuff around.
No, you're good.
Okay, all right. Toronto FC against Sporting Kansas City Friday. That game will be on sportsnet.ca/590. Kickoff is just after 7:30 p.m. I want to talk about that match and about TFC in particular this season, John, but I also do want to talk about the oral history of Toronto FC. You followed this team for a long, long time. Did you learn anything from writing that?
From
sitting down and kind of putting stuff together?
Yeah, there was a few things that like I didn't know about. I mean, the first one was about the logo. The guy who created it was apparently a guy named Ryan Smolkin, who then went on to fame launching the Smoke Patootery chain of restaurants, which I had no idea about that. So that was kind of interesting. The other one was, I guess the main thing that I learned was about the name. There was I knew that other names were being considered, including Inter Toronto FC, which they kind of wanted to play off the whole Inter Milan because it's a global brand. So I knew that they were considering that, but I didn't realize how close they were to actually naming the name. The club Inter Toronto FC. It just happened to leak out and they had a real negative reaction to it. And they sort of, but they trademarked it. They registered it and it sounded like they were ready to go. And Paul Byrne, who was one of the chief architects of the team early on, he was saying, you know, we dodged a bullet there. Well, but he was saying it was very close.
Those of us with memories of the Metros Croatia.
Right.
Yeah, it kind of, it excludes a certain part of the population.
Absolutely.
Rather directly, right?
So, well, in some cases, there would be Italians who would take offense to Inter Toronto.
I was going
to the Juve fans aren't going to be real thrilled about that.
And as a diehard Juventus fan, I would have certainly took offense.
What would have happened? What would have happened if they'd called the team that? What would you have called them?
I would have called them Inter Toronto FC.
Really?
But I mean,
as a Juventus fan, you'd be bleeding.
That would have offended me. But as I said, I mean, that was a major, I think, bullet dodge because that would have. I think Toronto FC is just a natural fit for them, and Inter TFC would have been. It would have been that whole ethnic thing, and I think that wouldn't have been the right move to go. So that was, as I said, that was a bit of a revelation.
Yeah, no, it's well, as you know, John, the big surprise for me was that in doing this piece was that I was at the first game. That was a big shock to me when you came.
I had to remind you about
actually
that.
Proved to me that I was at the big at the first game after I denied it three times.
That would indicate to me that your travel budget needs pruning.
No, it's a long time ago. It's just timed. Chivas USA,
right?
Which I guess it should be kind of a memorable signpost moment, but it really I think everybody remembers the Dicchio goal,
right?
But no one, I don't know how many people actually would remember the kind of pre anything that happened before that, aside from Mo Johnson's many pronouncements about many things.
Right. Well, and I think the reason is because a lot of the stuff before Dicchio was pretty forgettable, right? I mean, the Chivas game was in L.A. It was opening day, but only 14,000 people were there. They didn't score. They didn't score their first four games. So I think you're quite right. The Dicchio moment was kind of the first moment of the franchise where people kind of point to.
Is that when, when did you... You've watched soccer teams come and go in this city of, various sorts, and some of them championship teams. And at what moment did you believe, John, that this was different?
I think about midway through the season when I saw how terrible that they were on the field. The quality was pretty bad. But the atmosphere and sort of the fan culture that sort of enveloped the franchise, I just thought, wow, this is completely different. This is very much, if you transplanted BMO Field back then and into Europe, people wouldn't have known the difference. This was a very European different experience and fan atmosphere. So I just thought at that point that you know, the fan sort of experience, the culture really kind of became the story because the team was so bad, and yet they were still supporting them even though it was so bad. That, to me, that was sort of the turning point. Wow, this is going to be a bit different.
Because I always thought, you know, that's certainly the biggest difference was that kind of the supporters and how that became the story, really, in this
pitch
center voice, because there wasn't much on the pitch to talk about. Do you think, again, I'm trying to think how common that was in MLS at that moment, the idea of these kind of great supporters groups. And I know there were certainly some kind of ultras in different places.
Sure.
But, you know, one of the smart things they did here, whether it was by design or by accident, was to kind of give that sense of owner, allow that sense of ownership to the supporters, right?
Yeah.
Say, you know, this is your club, which is far more, is the case in Europe. There's not the sense of, things aren't thought of as franchises in Europe. They're thought of as clubs, and the club belongs to the community, and you're the custodian of it, ideally. But you don't, and you know, if John Henry, you're the guy cashing the checks. But,
sure.
But the idea is that the community owns the team, not you, and the supporters own the team,
right?
In a real sense. Do you have a sense how they managed? Was that a light bulb going off for somebody, or did it just evolve?
Well, it was a little bit of both. They did a very good job of reaching out to the supporter groups to begin with, and they sort of certainly cultivated and nurtured that over time, and they really kind of gave them, you know, that place in the South End and encouraged it and everything. And, you know, to your earlier question about how common was it in MLS at that time, not all that common. There was supporter groups, you know, certainly at the time in other franchises, but this really sort of changed sort of fan culture in MLS at that time. And, you know, when you look at other clubs, they really kind of saw what was going on in Toronto at the time and thought, you know, we'd like to bottle that. So, yeah, it was very much a turning point for the league at that point in time.
Because you look at it now, right, like the Atlanta thing, for
right.
instance, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's how MLS works now.
Right.
Right? That you cultivate a crazy group of, and so, you know, when you launch, those people are ready to go with their banners and their songs and their names and all of that stuff's kind of, is already there. You don't, you know, no one worries too much about the in-game experience because the in-game experience is taken care of.
Right. Oh, and that's the other thing, too. There was no sort of, like, bells and whistles.
Zero.
There was no, like, hey, let's bring out sort of cheerleaders, let's bring out sort of, you know, halftime entertainment. It was just, you know, let the fans do their thing. The other smart thing that they did was, and we kind of take it for granted now, was back then they did pub crawls.
Right.
They had Mo Johnston and players and the staff kind of meet the fans. And, you know, it's a common thing now. A lot of teams do it. But back then, not that it was revolutionary, but it wasn't all that uncommon.
Who gets credit for that?
I think MLSE. I mean, they were, Paul Byrne was telling me about how, you know, they started off slow. They, you know, there was like 10 people at the first one, and then it slowly built momentum. And there was only supposed to do four sessions over a month period. But by the fourth one, they had, you know, a few hundred people. They got so popular that they wanted to do more.
But
they made it a point to sort of reach out to these people.
It intrigues me, though, John, you know, that an organization that has made its cake by milking a captive audience, right, where you didn't have to sell them anything.
Right.
And they just showed up and you could just pick their pockets as they walked in and out the door, that they would have the creativity / foresight / vision to say, we got to do this completely differently here. You know, we've got to do something that's not like what we do.
Right.
You know, I think the other
it's pretty
thing,
remarkable, really.
The other thing that happened too, and I think this has to be said, and I'm not the guy's biggest fan, but I think Tim Lewicki also kind of pushed. He was the guy that kind of pushed it finally.
Yeah.
Over. He gave them
certainly on the pitch.
The pitch, but he also gave them a very outspoken political champion at MLSE. I mean, he was a soccer guy.
Yeah.
You ask him, what are you? I'm a soccer guy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I mean, this isn't to disparage Tom Anselmi and all those people, but, you know, they're nice people. But Tim was really the first one who sort of championed the case for soccer.
Yeah.
And certainly, like, when he came in, the Raptors and the Leafs were his first priority.
Sure.
Everyone understands that. But he was the first one who really sort of talked about TFC on the same level, really made it a priority. And, you know, you can balk at, you know, the Jermaine Defoe thing didn't work out, but that was a pretty gutsy thing that
sure
it did, and that was, it kind of led to where we are today, where, you know, it begot us Javinko, and it begot us, you know, Michael Bradley. That's the other thing people forget, that Michael Bradley came out of that, you know, bloody big deal. That was a pretty damn good sign.
And if you look at where Defoe is now, they weren't necessarily wrong that he did have a little bit of gas in the tank.
Sure.
He just didn't want to use it here.
No, that's it, exactly.
Yeah, no, I think that was almost a necessary mistake in some ways. It was something they had to do, and I really believe they emerged better for having done that, both philosophically and on the field. We've only got a couple of minutes left. It's great to see Toronto FC at home. Usually when they come home, they've played 9 games already because the stadium's being built or something's being done
right
to it. How do you feel about this team this year?
Good. I think they're really solid. They're much like last year.
You know, are they better than last year in some areas, do you think?
Yeah, I think they're a little bit better in midfield. I think, you know, the addition of Victor Vasquez is a great addition. He's this, you know, really, you can see his class in the center of midfield. And I think he'll do a good job of linking up with Giovinco and Altidore. I mean, defensively, I would say they probably don't have the same depth as they did last year. But, you know, their starting three is still very good. So, yeah, I think this is a, they're in a very good spot. The core of the team that was there last year is in place. They're young. You know, Michael Bradley and Sebastian Giovinco and Jozy Altidore, they're still in the prime of their careers. So this is going to be a very good team, I think, for a very long time.
Yeah, and you really get the sense, too, that there's we talked a little bit about this off-air, but with Greg Vanney, you get the sense that I made the point that it's a guy who strikes me as someone who takes his job very seriously, and you really get the sense that tactically there's an awareness there too.
Yeah, he's a very thoughtful guy. I think he's really onto something with the 3-5-2 formation that he's going with, because I just think it brings out the natural talents and utilizes what he has much better. So I think that was a smart move. And I just think he manages people right too, right? Mm-hmm. The previous managers have been kind of, you know,
just about everything, if you actually you want to go from top to bottom.
Well, yeah. I mean, they went for the British-sounding guy. They went to the German guy. The German guy brought in a Dutch guy as well. I mean, it was like they sort of fell for it, fell for everything. And then
for everything, yeah.
They hit in a guy who was American and kind of knew.
Knew the league. You know, Preki was an authoritarian, but he's, you know, Greg is very much, you know, pretty easygoing, very serious guy. But I think he gets on well with the players and he has a rapport with them. And I think that's, you know, it says a lot.
Toronto FC's home opener tomorrow night against Sporting Kansas City. The game will be on sportsnet.ca/590. John Molinaro, chief soccer reporter for Sportsnet. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, really well done. The oral history of Toronto FC is on the sportsnet.ca site. If you have not yet read it, please do. And even if you're not a soccer fan, read it, because there's a lot of F-bombs in it, which is always a good read. Thanks again, John.
No problem.